fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Well, I love her, but I love the fish. I spend all day out on this lake, and hell is all I catch. But today she met me at the door, said I would have to choose. If I hit that fishing hole today, she'd be packing all her things and she'd be gone by noon. Well, I'm gonna miss her when I get home. Right now I'm on this lake shore, and I'm sitting in the sun. I'm sure it'll hit me when I walk through that door tonight. Yeah, I'm gonna miss her on the day. I've got a bite on.
Today on Route 51, it's a show for all of us who would rather just be fishing. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio, and our very special guest for the next hour, legendary Northwoods fishing guide, lure designer, television producer, and host, author, editor, speaker, and blues man, Joe Bucher, member of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. And he's here to take your questions and phone calls and to give you advice on fishing strategy and techniques, giving us the lowdown on the start of the northern muskie season last weekend, tips on when and where to find the big ones, and how to land them after you've hooked them. Joe Bucher can also comment on the condition of our northern lakes and rivers as we go into our seventh year of drought in north-central Wisconsin, talk about the risks posed by invasive species, how to keep our lakes and rivers healthy and free from the critters and plants that can be transported as we move boats from one body of water to another. Now, this is a show dedicated to you, the Wisconsin fishermen, and to all of us who care about conservation and protecting the priceless legacy of our Northwoods fishing and hunting habitats. We don't get Joe very often. We've got him for the next hour. So if you're interested in any of that, if you want to get some tips from the guy who knows it all, our lines are wide open right now. You can get in at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area. That's 261-6371, or toll free anywhere you're listening at 1-800-780-9742. That number again, 1-800-780-9742. And again, if you want to talk to Joe Bucher, all three of our phone lines are open right now. Joe, you were out on the water filming your TV show today. Tell us how your afternoon went.
Well, you know, Glenn, you mentioned the low water situation is 7 years of drought. It's really worse than it's ever been up here. It's to a point where it's frustrating. I can't imagine what, you know, these people that haven't been here yet this year, when that own properties on these lakes, when they come up and they try to put their boats in and their docks in, they are going to be in for a huge surprise. I'm having lots of trouble finding places to actually get in and fish. The lake we actually fished this afternoon is right down the road from my office here. It's a little lake called Anvil. And we go out there and film a smallmouth show, and the landing is so bad that you basically just got to get out of the boat, and you got to walk your boat out in the water, and you know, to get your boat in the water.
Yeah, it's
lucky if you can do that.
You know, it's really a shame. Those of us who live in central Wisconsin are used to going to, say, the Eau Plaine Reservoir and seeing these docks that extend out and then just kind of drop 20 or 30 feet into nothing. I mean, there's no water out there. And to think of our priceless heritage, our northern lakes, being in a lot of the same shape, is it's really disheartening.
Yeah, it really is. It's created an interesting thing up here, because it's created clusters of anglers on, you know, it's like we have about one-third the bodies of water up here to fish, so everybody's going to where the flowages and stuff that have where they can regulate the water from some kind of a dam flow.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever there's a good boat landing and decent water levels, that's where all the anglers have been fishing. And I've been doing some of that, and I've been playing around with some of the low water as well, and just you know, fighting the low water conditions to get into these lakes. And but I'll tell you, the other thing about it is if you can't get out there, you do. It's a lesson in how to fish. You know, the lower water, and you do. And the other thing is you do get to really see some of the shoreline structure and some of the mid lake structure. From an exposed standpoint, so it's a really cool learning process.
So hopefully when the water levels go back up again, you'll know where to go because all of that's visible to you.
Yes, you really learn the configuration and the topography and the bottom substrates. You really get to learn a lot about, you get to learn a lake in a whole different way. So, you know, there's some pluses and minuses to low water, but right now, you know, there's a lot of minuses from an access standpoint, and there's a lot of my favorite lakes up here that I just can't get my boat into.
So what you're saying is that the lakes are not only low, but where there is decent water, they're crowded.
They're very crowded, yes. I was going to do a little smallmouth fishing today, and generally I'll fish, oh gosh, anywhere from 15 to 25 lakes up here. I just rotate from one to the other, so I never really put much pressure on any one of them. And I've only been able to fish three lakes all spring, Butternut and Kentuck pretty much. And I've got one lake up in Land O'Lakes, a little lake called Portage I've been on a little bit. But That lake is in bad shape, really bad shape and very low too, so that really isn't in the class. The reason I hesitate saying it, because it really, it's like Anvil, it's a real chore. But Butternut and Kentuck, and you can imagine the traffic on Butternut and Kentuck, there were 50 cars in that little parking lot at Butternut today, and it's just terrible. So it's putting a lot of pressure on these fish, in very concentrated areas.
We got a little bit of rain this past week. Did that help at all?
Yeah, you know, it's just not enough. You know, I know we're supposed to get an all-day rain tomorrow. We need 2 weeks of that to even...
2 weeks or maybe 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months to even make a difference. But and hopefully, you know, we're going to get out of this trend here. But right now, We're in a tough spot here with this low water, and it creates a whole different challenge for anglers, that's for sure.
Legendary fishing guide Joe Bucher, he's with us for the next hour, taking your calls and giving you fishing tips and strategy and techniques at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And we've got a caller. Let's go to Travis in Wautoma. Travis, you're on Route 51.
Hey, Joe, how's it going today?
Good, Travis. How are you?
Good. I'm up, headed up to the Wolf River. I'm just wondering how the fishing prospects are looking for the weekend here.
Well, you know, it looks like from a weather standpoint, you're going to have lots of weather, which, you know, usually lots of weather is good. Depends on what you're fishing for. What's your target species?
White bass.
You should have really good fishing.
All right.
You know,
you got any suggestions on towns and locations?
You know what? I haven't fished that area for white bass in a few years, but I think you're gonna have a good weekend. Make sure you got a good set of rain gear, though. We're supposed to get some of this much, much needed rain, so make sure that you don't forget your rain gear.
Oh, for sure. All right. Well, that's about all I needed to know. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
All right. Thanks, Travis, so much for the phone call. And again, if you'd like to talk to Joe Bucher, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open again, and I'm going to try to get as many phone calls in as possible. Joe, we had a lot of strange weather this spring. We had an unseasonably warm March and April, followed by a snowstorm and a hard freeze in early May. That was followed by 90-degree weather. How does that affect fishing behavior, or does it?
It really does. It's a very unseasonable, you know, like you say, a very weird spring. What ends up happening in a spring like that? When you get a very early ice out like we did, and then you get a prolonged blast of warm weather, you get a very early spawn. And it's like, for example, I have run into tons of anglers at the boat landings in spring say, "Oh, the crappies haven't come in to spawn yet." Oh, well, yes, they have. And a lot of these
they've come and gone already.
Exactly. They came in April. You know, it's they're looking for crappies. To come in, they were really looking for crappies to come in on traditionally on Memorial Weekend, which they do in a lot of lakes. And I am seeing some spawning crappies. I'm not saying they all did this. But a big, big spawn happened in April, and that's very typical. We had water temperatures, you know, by early May, we had water temperatures already in the 60s. We got water temperatures in the 70s now. We didn't see 70-degree water temperature up here until August last year. You know, we had that real cold summer. So what you get is an April spawn on bass and panfish. And of course, the walleyes, they're in and out really quick. But that's what happens. What is unique, though, and very few people are aware of this, is that you get multiple spawns on a year like this, which is very good.
I've never heard of that before.
Yes, yes. When you go south of the Mason-Dixon line, a lot of our warm water species will, especially largemouths, for example, which is the most popular overall species in North America. Largemouth, for example, the further south you go, they'll get a double, a triple, even a quadruple spawn. You'll get a January spawn, a February spawn, a March spawn, and an April spawn, for example, in central and southern Florida. Up here, we typically get one spawn on bluegills, crappies, and largemouth and smallmouth bass. In a year like this, you will get multiple spawns. I've seen it happen. For example, these crappies we talked about, there was a huge group of them that came in April, and those fish are in and out, but there's a smaller group that's come in the last couple of weeks. And it's really amazing to watch, but I've seen, I typically in a year like this see two smallmouth spawns. And there was one this year, I know there was one in late April, early May.
And is that across the board, or is it just on some lakes and some rivers?
It's probably on just some lakes and rivers that really warmed up fast, but I'll tell you, where the population, and this is really cool because where the population is heavy, this is one of those really great years where you will see, down the road 4 or 5 years, you're going to see the great results of a year like this because there was so much spawning activity. There's fry everywhere. Mm. There's hatched fry everywhere.
So nature has a way of fixing things.
Yeah.
Here we have this crazy year with this erratic weather, and it's going to pay dividends for us maybe not this year, but 4 or 5 years from now.
And you look at how different the 2 years are. Last year we had that little burst of warm weather, but then we had this really cold summer for the most part. And this year, a completely different animal. The early ice out and then a summer-like weather for 45 days, it's been incredible.
And who knows what's going to happen for the next few months. Joe, this weekend, it's free fishing weekend. All the waters of the state, including the Great Lakes, you can fish without a license. That's a great thing for introducing kids to the joy of fishing, isn't it? When you have parents and adults who can go out and take their children with them, but for the parents to be able to fish for free, that really helps introduce kids to the outdoors and get them away from those video games.
I'll tell you, there's nothing better than introducing kids to the outdoors, hunting and fishing. I dedicate a portion of my year to teaching kids how to hunt and fish. In fact, this spring I took a large group of local kids here off and on throughout the whole spring turkey hunting. We had our first youth turkey camp, which really lasted the whole season. And I just had a blast taking these father and son groups that had never hunted turkeys before and teaching them how to do that. And same thing with fishing, and to take advantage of a weekend like this, you're absolutely right. It's a great opportunity. And at the same time, the resource is in a situation right now at a time of the year, and the weather's working in your favor that they should have great fishing. One more thing is when they take kids out on a weekend like this where they've never gone before, it's really important. One of the things I've learned is it's really important to get youth into a real positive experience with the outdoors right away, and that's what sells them on going back again and again and again.
Now, on a cloudy, overcast weekend with a lot of rain, what are the best techniques if kids are going after a lot of them, I imagine, will be going after bluegills, but some will be fishing for bass, northern walleyes?
What I've found is that, in my opinion, most kids want to cast. They want to cast and retrieve and catch. They want to catch fish, but they love to just... It's hard for them to even just cast and leave something sit.
Right.
And parents want them to watch a bobber and bobber fish more than kids a lot of times like to do it. I know one of the... I related to myself when I was that age. I wanted to cast and retrieve and cast and retrieve, and I had as much fun just casting as I did catching fish. So when you take kids out, you know, there should be, you should use a lure that they can catch lots of different fish on. One of my favorite lures to teach kids on fishing is a spinnerbait, a safety pin style spinnerbait, a 1/4 ounce to 3/8 ounce spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm.
They can cast it on spin casting, spinning, or bait casting tackle. They can catch pike, bass, muskies. You know, they can catch everything on spinnerbaits. If you throw a spinnerbait anywhere around cover, it's probably going to go through the cover without getting tangled up. So
right.
You're going to have a high degree of success with the lure. And at the same time, they're casting. And the other thing is while they're out there, always have casting contests and all kinds of things going on. So there's always a challenge on every cast.
You know, when we were kids, we had short attention spans. I hate to think of how short the attention spans are now with computers, video games, the fast pace of multimedia. So it makes sense. Get them out and have them cast.
Yep. Get them out and get them doing something. You know, a lot of times, you know, the standard way of doing things is to get somebody out and anchor on a spot and throw, you know, a bobber and a worm or whatever out there and try to catch some panfish. And if you got these panfish located, that's one thing. And by the way, that is another key is you know, parents, when you're going out there whoever's going to be the mentor in the situation that's going on in the water, one of the best things to do, most of the fish this time of the year are shallow. Go, you know, put some polarized sunglasses on, you know, put your hat, your bill and your cap down tight so you can really look in the water. Put your trolling motor down and just move along the shoreline and look for visual signs of fish. Once you see those fish, you know, landmark the areas, then back off, and then get your rigs ready and go in and get them. But, you know, it's real easy to locate the fish this time of the year because most of it's visual.
There you go. Joe Bucher, legendary fishing guide. He's with us for the full hour. Taking your phone calls, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We've got lines open right now. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we will be back with more of Joe Bucher right after this.
I'll tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
You know.
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun.
But I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition. Gone fishing.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Legendary fishing guide Joe Bucher with us for the entire hour. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Pat in Phelps. Pat, you're on Route 51.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Good.
Doing well.
Say, I just want to build on Joe's point about the exposed shorelines we're seeing in northern Wisconsin lakes right now. As someone who works as a specialist around the state with lakes, it's real important for people to be careful when they're walking around that habitat, not to try to pull that wood out or to impact those shorelines as little as possible. So just that reminder. And I'm curious, Joe, if you've seen over time lakes like Anvil and Butternut are some treasures I like to fish as well. And I'm just wondering if you've seen some changes with woody habitat over time on those lakes.
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I've seen lots of changes in the habitat over the years, not only with woody habitat, but, you know, weed growth. I think weed growth more than anything else. I remember... I'm really dating myself here, but I remember back in the early 70s when I fished these lakes, when the weed beds, for the most part, were really lush, and the weed species was different than today. Of course, we've had this huge influx of exotic weed species,
like purple loosestrife and so on.
And yeah, so it's really changed the topography of the lakes and how the fish behave in them, and we've lost some of our native weed species, which has changed some things too. In a lake like the lakes like Anvil and Butternut, some of these gin clear lakes with a lack of weedy cover, a lot of the wood, you know, in wood in general, it takes a long time to deteriorate, but it will deteriorate. It's not like a rock that stays there for a very long time. So you, some of that stuff's going to deteriorate over time. But, you know, it's the biggest change I've seen is the weeds, the change in weeds, and where some of these lakes don't have any weeds at all, and some of these lakes now have a completely different kind of weed that's a lot more difficult to deal with.
Pat, do you have a quick follow-up?
Well, just to say that a lot of those native aquatic plants are real important, and sometimes folks get an inkling to take those out as well. So it just speaks to the point that that's important habitat and little fish factories as well. So it's important to keep those around too.
Okay, Pat, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
With some of these lakes no longer having the weed cover, how much of that is due to a lack of phosphates and agricultural runoff, and how much of that is due to invasive species like the rusty crayfish, which have decimated the weed cover in some of our lakes?
It's really interesting you should ask that question, because I am certain that it was really interesting to watch that happen in the 80s. The early 80s is when the rusty crayfish really came on strong around here, and in fact, they were, you know, there was a period of time here for about 15 years where they were being commercially harvested at a strong rate up here because,
well, if you can't beat them, eat them, right?
Yeah, so there were commercial fishermen up here. You know, you go out on a lake like, for example, they were talking about butternut. You go out on a lake and you see jugs all over the place.
Star Lake, you
Star
know,
Lake,
Pilos
yep,
County.
A lot of lakes in Boulder Junction too. Big Lake west of Boulder Junction there, you see these big white jugs all over the lake, and what those jugs were, those were crab traps, you know, and you see a guy with a great big...
Joe, we got to take a break. We got a news break coming up here. If you want to talk to Joe Bucher, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are open. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51.
Comes from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, dedicated to improving the independence, productivity, and integration of people with developmental disabilities. Wisconsin BPDD, real lives, real change.
Bet you're going fishing all the time. Come on, baby, going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife, she gonna catch more fish than you.
Many fish bites if you got good bait.
Here, little tip that I'm a lot to relate. Come on, honey and my, I'm going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing in the beaver, going fishing too.
We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network with legendary fishing guide Joe Bucher, asking your questions about the health of our northern lakes, about where to find the big ones and how to land them once you find them, and anything else that might come to your mind. This is a rare opportunity for you to speak directly to Joe Bucher and get some answers from the expert. He's with us for the next 25 minutes, and our telephone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. And Joe, before we took the break, we were talking about the rusty crayfish, kind of a nasty invasive species that takes away all the weed cover in some of our northern lakes. And how does that affect fish population?
What it really does is it changes habitat. You know, it takes away. So when you take away for example, the rusty crayfish really, really decimated the native cabbage weeds in a lot of these lakes. And so what the fish did, the fish just react. When that habitat wasn't available anymore, that shallower cover, these fish just kicked off of those reefs and those bars and all that whole littoral zone that used to be full of weeds. Now that it's clean, the fish were just deeper and out over open water. They suspended more, so the fish just kind of shifted their location in a lot of these lakes, which made them much more difficult to catch and made it much more difficult for anglers to locate the fish.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in a lot of those lakes is a lot of anglers drew the wrong conclusion that, you know, the fish were gone. But what actually happened was they just really changed locations, and to a great extent too, their forage base. You know, are
they eating more crayfish?
You could argue that one of the big success stories in northern Wisconsin in the last 12 to 15 years has been the resurgence of the smallmouth bass up here. We now have smallmouth bass fishing in northern Wisconsin that's second to none. And they are, you know, their favorite food is crayfish, and they eat rusties as well as native crayfish. But, you know, the walleyes, and the pike and the muskie. The pike and muskies eat crayfish, but not as much. But what ended up happening is all those schools of perch and walleyes and stuff that used to be in minnows that used to hang around those weed beds when they were still here.
So where do you find them now if the weed beds aren't there anymore?
It's a whole different way of fishing. The first thing to do is check offshore structure like humps, rock humps, sandbars, deep gravel bars, man-made fish cribs. A lot of people put the man-made fish cribs in to replace the cabbage weeds that were once around. And the other thing is these fish just become suspended. So you go from a precise, structure-oriented, reading break lines kind of fishing to open water trolling. And, you know, because the fish are out there chasing around schools of perch and ciscos and all kinds of different pelagic fish that are out over open water.
So trolling is one way to get at them if you don't know where they're going to be.
It is the way to get at these open water fish. In fact, in July and August, I will typically fish a lot of the lakes outside of the Vilas and Oneida County Range where trolling is allowed more. And I will concentrate on those open water fish all summer long because most people don't.
Joe, what do you use when you troll? Do you use a spoon or a rapella or...
You can use a number of things, Glenn, depending upon the species. But if you're after walleyes, the first thing to do is just you fish with a selection of different deep diving crankbaits. Set them up use trolling rods that have line counter style reels. In other words, they have a digital line counter, so you know exactly how much line you have out between the lure and the rod tip.
Okay.
And you have to get that number down because that'll determine how deep your lure is running. And then you let a certain amount of line out. For example, if you've got 100 feet of line out, and then you clamp it onto what they call a planer board. And a planer board will give you more spread, more trolling pass. It'll give you what a planer board basically does, Glenn, is it gives you more spread on a trolling pass. It also keeps your lures away from the path of the boat itself. So if the fish are shallow, they won't be as spooked. Once you start taking fish on a certain lure, you also want to know how deep you were catching them. So you always want to make sure you keep note on how much line you had out between the lure and the rod tip, because that'll determine. And you have to keep experimenting with that, by the way, until you nail it. And you always want to be watching your sonar units, so you're watching for signs of suspended bait fish and suspended game fish on your sonar unit. That's also tipping you off as to how deep the fish are.
You know what I found is fun too is at night trolling with a surface lure like a jitterbug something real noisy. You can hear that thing popping in the background as you're going across the lake.
Yes, in fact, that's another way to catch these fish. When you lose cover like you're talking about there with the rusty crayfish, and these bars that were once covered with weeds, all of a sudden they're clean. What ends up happening too is these fish move shallow and more of a nocturnal nature, and night fishing becomes the best way to catch them.
Joe Bucher, on Route 51, our phone number 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. We have Lewis in Stevens Point. Lewis, you're on Route 51.
Joe, up on Lake Tomahawk, we used to have a great walleye portion in the lake, but I think it's been declining a bit. But frankly, you're right, the smallmouth bass have taken over, and I'm wondering if you've noticed the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's an article in the latest issue of Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources magazine that talks about how the bass have really taken over as the number one species in a lot of our lakes, the most dominant species. And a lot of that is due to over-harvest by Native Americans, and that has had a lot to do with it in these lakes. And the other thing is that, you know, it's just a natural progression that would have occurred when those populations of fish dropped down, that something else would have taken their place. And what's really neat about what happened is that about 20 years, 15 to 20 years ago, when the old DNR fisheries chief, Lee Kernan, instituted this catch-and-release bass season where you're not allowed to keep these fish until after June 15th. And it just enabled these fish to grow and really get age back on them, where they used to be harvested heavy. But now, because these walleye populations were depleted, in the ceded territory, the smallmouth and the largemouth have become the more dominant species.
Thank you.
You betcha.
Lewis, thanks so much for the phone call. Joe, we haven't seen the protests that we used to see along the boat landings. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, we had some very angry people mm-hmm. protesting the Native American harvests. You could get the idea that it's not a problem anymore, just simply by the lack of complaints.
I think people have kind of given up. They've accepted that this is the way it's going to be, and so that's kind of what's happened. But they're still harvesting as many fish as they always have. In fact, record harvests every year. It's just that there's nobody there talking about it. There's the press isn't covering it. There's nobody there protesting it. So no, nothing has changed in the amount of fish that are being harvested. But it's just one of those things that we're forced to live with it. We're forced to live with it right now, you know. So it's one of those things that I know it's occurring. The local papers up here cover it. People just kind of gave up protesting it. But it has, you know. And I have a lot of friends who are Native American, so I don't want to offend any of them. But I also want to make it very clear, Glenn, that it has absolutely has had an effect on the walleye population.
Do you think the DNR could be doing anything to better manage the resources?
I think they're doing everything they can. I think their hands are completely tied, and no one should blame the DNR for this. You're basically every spring, you're only world. The DNR looks these lakes over, checks these lakes, and they make an assessment as to how many fish can be speared and how many fish can be caught by sport anglers. And then there's another DNR, the Great Lakes Fish and Wildlife Service, which is the Indian version of the DNR, which also does their own survey of these lakes and comes up with their own calculations of how many fish are in these lakes. And then there's an argument that goes between the two of them as to how many fish they're going to allow the Native Americans to spear and how many they're going to allow the anglers to catch. And that's kind of how it's done now. It's totally it's partially a biological process, but it's also very much a political process.
And compromise ends up
very much compromised. But the loser has really been on some of these lakes has been the fishery, the original walleye fishery. It's one of those things. It is what it is.
What are some of the best lakes for catching walleyes right now? If you want to go out and walleye fish, where does Joe Bucher go?
Honestly, the best lakes for walleyes right now are outside the ceded territory. If I had to go walleye fishing right now for high quality class fish, I would go way to the east or way to the west. In other words, I go all the way to Lake Michigan. I fish all of the Sturgeon Bay, Green Bay area, La Bay de Nock. That whole area in there is outstanding. Also, the Mississippi River on the western side of Wisconsin, from Red Wing all the way down to Prairie du Chien, that is outstanding walleye water. I'm blown away by how good it is. The Mississippi is so good for walleyes. It's the average size of the fish, too. Lake Pepin, I was overfishing Lake Pepin this spring, mm-hmm. and the average size of the fish we caught was 23 inches.
That's one of the nice things about fishing a river, too. It's hard to fish them out.
Yes, and especially when it's a large system like Mississippi. But, it's one of those things that, there's not that much harvest on them, but the lakes are so prolific. The rivers are, excuse me, and then mm-hmm. all of the backwaters and stuff that they connect to something like the Mississippi, and then the Great Lakes. I'd say the number one spot is, Sturgeon Bay, Green Bay area. I mean, it's just fantastic. Egg Harbor, that whole area in there for big walleyes. Glenn, it is outstanding.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest today, legendary fishing guide Joe Bucher, 1-800-780-9742. We've got lines open. Let's go to Chris in La Crosse right now. Chris, how are you picking us up in La Crosse?
Oh, well, I'm on the interstate, and I might be losing radio contact soon, but I'm coming across from Green Bay. What a great show. It's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Well, ask your question fast then so that we don't lose you.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm a transplant to La Crosse, so I appreciate what you're saying about the Mississippi water system. And not only is there great walleye fishing, but the smallmouth fishing is just as prolific. I was up in northwest Wisconsin recently, kind of my old stomping grounds, and I wondered if Mr. Bucher could just talk a little bit, speak to the trauma that happens to smallmouth bass and the repetitive catching, pulling them off the beds regularly. You know, they're so fun to catch and such strong fighters, but I worry a little bit about, you know, how easy they can be to target because they're in clear water and you can see them. And if you could just speak to that a little bit.
Joe, you still with us?
Yes, yes. Well, you know, thanks for the phone call, too, by the way. And you're absolutely right about the smallmouth fishing over there in Mississippi. It's awesome. So is the largemouth fishing.
As far as the Wisconsin River isn't bad, too, for smallmouth.
You know what? We've got so much great smallmouth fishing all over the state right now. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. To address the stress and mortality of smallmouth during the spawning season, it's arguable. I think what ends up happening is on bodies of water where they really catch a lot of fishing pressure, and they get caught repeatedly. It could be a problem. But boy, I'll tell you, if you look at the fishery and the way what's happening up here in northern Wisconsin right now, and the amount of guys that are out here fishing bass, and it's a lot of them. The fishery just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better and better. And I don't believe there's a lot of mortality. There's some, probably, but it's not a big issue. It's because these fish have to be put back. What Chris needs to realize is that before this catch and release season was here, those fish were being capped. So at least anglers are going out there and, you know, they can enjoy and go out and have a good time and catch these fish. But they have to put them back. And, what you also find in a lot of these cases, unless you're fishing live bait, which I think should be taboo for smallies, by the way.
I agree.
Is once you've caught these fish once or twice, they get tough to catch. You know, betting fish get tough to catch. And these big fish especially, they're like, I've been down this road before. I've seen that bait, you know, so guys can throw at them. But, you know, harassment of fish on spawning beds is something that's been talked about from Florida to Canada. And it's been bass fishing magazines. It's in, you know, a lot of national and regional publications. But, boy, I'll tell you, it's an emotional issue more than, you know, and arguably an ethical issue more than it is an actual biological issue, because when it's all said and done, the fishing up here it's getting better and better and better. When you harvest, when you start harvesting, different story. You put them in a live well and you take them home, they're gone. But when you're catching them and putting them back, they're there next year and they're there the year after, and it's just a wonderful situation.
Chris, thanks so much for the phone call.
Hey, it was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
We got to take a quick break. We are talking to Joe Bucher. He's going to be with us for about another 7 or 8 minutes. So if you've got a phone call that you'd like to make, our number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, back after this.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
Our guest, Joe Bucher, legendary fishing guide on Route 51. Joe, we haven't even talked about the muskie season.
Mm-hmm.
The season started this weekend. How much luck were people having?
Oh, it was a great opener. When you have a spring like we had, Glenn, with a lot muskie fishing, early season muskie fishing is totally predicated on weather. When you have a spring like we had, you're going to have good early season muskie fishing. And what's really, I'm catching them like bass fishing, Glenn. I've caught two dandies bass fishing, And I've got a boat.
You caught the muskies bass fishing.
Oh, it's,
see, that's what usually happens to me. I'm bass fishing. I get the muskies on, and I'm not Joe Bucher, so I can't land them on the 8-pound test.
Yeah, you can. You can't get impatient. You know, you got to get lucky that they're hooked right and that they don't bite you off. But if you just got to take them easy, you just can't push them. I've caught fish over 50 inches on 6-pound test lines. It can be done, but it's not easy. But yeah, the muskie fishing, Glenn, has been great. If any of the listeners are going out here, one of the things we've noticed is that these muskies are, even though it's been warm and the water's warm, the fish are shallow. And when I'm bass fishing now, I've been bass fishing, filming all our bass shows the last 2 weeks. And when I'm looking, if the shoreline's on my left, I'm fishing bass on the shoreline and then to the flat in front of me. And right in front of me to the right, I'm seeing muskies. You know, they're not up as shallow as the bass, but I'm seeing them up there. And every once in a while, you know, I throw something in front of them, gulp, down it goes, and set the hook, and now you got a 15-minute battle, so it's been a blast. But I've been watching muskie guys. My cameraman is a fanatical muskie fisherman, and he caught 7 this past weekend.
So no kidding.
Fighting really good.
Let's try to squeeze in another phone call. Tony in Wausau, you're on with Joe Bucher. Hello, Tony.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the call. Joe, just wondering, big muskie fisherman, with the weather, just talking about weather changes last year, summer was kind of up and down all around. Wondering what your favorite tactic is for that cold front.
Well, I tell you, you're right. I mean, last summer was a terrible summer. When you get a cold summer like that, it's a struggle. You know, fish are cold-blooded creatures, and so, you know, I've heard this misnomer so many times. Well, they got to eat. Well, the bottom line is no, they don't. You know, no matter what the weather is, you and I have to eat. But when you have warmer water and good weather, you're going to get, you know, lots of feeding and lots of activity. When you have cold fronts, you're not going to. The best tactic for cold front muskies is to fish the last hour of daylight. Fish your best spot with your favorite lure, the lure you have the most confidence in, the last hour of daylight. And what you'll find in those cold front days is that, you know, the fish will not move, and they just won't respond for 12, 14, 15 hours, and all of a sudden, you know, that half hour right before dark, bam, you get a little window there, and you'll get it on your best spot, you know, with your best bait. And I've caught more of my big fish in situations like that than I can remember. But it's, you know, these cold front, that's the way you catch a big fish in cold front.
Tony, thanks so much for the phone call.
Great, thank you.
Joe, it seems that last hour right around dusk is good for a lot of fish under a lot of conditions.
Yes, it sure is, Glenn. But you know what is really underrated, though, is the solar bite. When you get a cold spring, for example, which we don't have this year, when you get a cold spring, but it's still happening now, is that the best bite right now for especially the fish that are still in a spawning state is the midday bite. When the solar heat is at its peak, 11 to about 3 in the afternoon, by far the best time to bass fish and panfish right now.
You have to fish deep at that time of the day, though, don't you? No.
Not right now. In fact, when I was cruising looking for bass today, I saw huge schools of crappies and bluegills, and the only place they were was out of the wind where it was really warm. And anytime you had wind hitting a spot, or you felt like you had to put a jacket on where there was any kind of a wind chill, there were no fish. And these fish were totally related to the solar heat. Solar heat, solar heat can be a huge, huge trigger on big muskies this time of the year, by the way.
Okay.
Relating back to that caller, when this time of the year, the best bite for big muskies in good weather will be the hottest part of the day.
Joe, we're out of time. It's gone very quickly. Thanks so much. And I want you to get in a plug real quick for the Blues Festival. It's this Saturday, on Saturday, July 31st, correct, in St. Germain?
That is correct, and we're hoping to have you there as well.
I'm going to try to make it this year, Joe.
Great. Well, I enjoyed speaking with you this afternoon.
All right. Thanks so much. We want to thank today's guest, Joe Bucher, and you can find Joe's fishing gear at most bait and tackle shops across north central Wisconsin. You can check out his website, joebucher.com. And remember, the Joe Bucher Blues Fest is Saturday, July 31st at the St. Germain Pavilion. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin. Special music today by Brad Paisley, Taj Mahal, Bing Crosby, and Louis Armstrong, and the producers of the Andy Griffith TV show. Now, this coming Monday at 4 p.m., we've got a special Route 51 broadcast featuring retiring Democratic Congressman Dave Obey. He'll be here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studio, taking your phone calls for the full hour. That's Dave Obey on a special edition of Route 51 this coming Monday, June 7th at 4 p.m. So tell your friends. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Remember, free fishing weekend at our state parks and forests this weekend. And until next Monday, we're heading out of town.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You're bothering me. Folks won't find us now.